Krug steps into it, fires, and it deflects to the far corner. And the Toronto Maple Leafs have rallied to win game 6, 3-1. They have tied this series at 3 games apiece. And game 7 will take place at TD Garden 2 nights from now.
Now it's all about that one game, so it's you can look back all you want, but now that's where you're at.
Listen, it's game 7. They want to keep playing hockey, and they just want to turn their A game, and that's all that goes through their heads.
We want the cup!
19 seconds left on the power play. Here's Krejci Kvarcer, feathered up top. Pastrnak, wrister, they score! That was Jake DeBrusk with a tip down low, just off the far post, and he angles it in. A power play goal! Digging away, centered, deflected, out in front, Heinen shoots, he scores! Seconds left here in the first. Near point, Miller shoots, looking for a bank right of the net. They score! What a savvy play by Kevin Miller! He saw that he didn't have a lane, went for a bank shot off the end boards, comes up the far side, and it's Patrice Bergeron in the far circle who snapped it into the empty net. And the Bruins have a 3-2 lead with 36 seconds left in the first.
Hey, this is from me. This is from Nicky Knuckles to Anderson. Anderson, I'm looking for you. You two-faced rat.
No one's gonna take me alive. The time has come to make things right.
Kevin Miller with the puck. High slot Krug.
You and I must fight for life.
4 against 4 with 18:54 to go in the third.
Kevin Miller with the puck, high slot through, fires, and scores! A face-off win! Torrey Krug with a blast at the high slot! Long left side, beats Freddie Anderson, and the Garden is alive! It's tied at 4! Here's DeBrusk going wide, drops his shoulder, shoots, he scores!
DeBrusk trying to get ready to score!
Whistled a wrister by Freddie Anderson. 5-4 Bruins. Crashing it out in front is Pastrnak. He scores. David Pastrnak all by himself.
Pasta.
We got up around 10 a.m. in a bowl of pasta.
1 minute remaining in regulation in Game 7. 6-4 Bruins. Bruins with a puck. Marchand angles over the red line. Backhand. Scores!
I'm not Marymount Park in Quincy, and I will school you in street hockey.
All season long, the Bruins have been resilient. All season long, the Boston Bruins have found a way. Tonight, trailing, heading into the third period, the Boston Bruins make it happen. The Bruins win it in Game 7. Victory 7-4 over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Goodbye, Toronto. Hello, Tampa.
.5 the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. Shud Serrat, who you heard a lot of during that montage that Rich made, called the game last night here at 98.5 the Sports Hub in the Bruins Radio Network. Judd, how much faith did you have going into that third period that you would be working another game this season?
I felt pretty good.
Why?
Oh,
why?
Because they had done it all season long. They had.
Well, I mean, they had,
Rask,
but...
Okay,
but,
so let me... Hold on. They did it all season long, finding ways to win. I think, all right, so the midpoint or the turning point of the season was mid-November when they had to straighten things out, and they had to straighten things out defensively. And then from that point forward, missing key guys all season long, how are they going to be able to do it? They missed Bergeron, they missed Krug, they missed Rast, they missed David Krejci for points of the season, they missed Chara, they missed Rick Nash.
McAvoy,
We go on and on and on. And still, they had an opportunity to take first overall in the Eastern Conference going to the last weekend of the regular season.
Yeah, but and then they went on a losing streak. And they failed to do that.
I think that, you know, I think the team, listen, they had worked so hard through March. I think what you saw in early April, since we're going back to the regular season here, that was a byproduct of the schedule and the amount of games and the type of games that they had to play in March and what it took for them to be able to pick up wins without key guys in the lineup. And maybe that caught up to them in April. They had a chance to catch their breath. Everybody was worried, well, how's the top line going to respond? David Pastrnak had, what, 13 points in the first round? You had everybody chipping in. If you look across the numbers in that seven games, you had all four lines contributing. Yes, you had some bumpy moments during the course of the series, certainly in net. The way you defended, even up front, there were some lapses at certain times. But what you saw across the seven games was what got the Bruins to 50 wins across the regular season. And that gave them an opportunity to win in the final 20 minutes.
Then what happened to those losses during this series? Because, I mean, they looked nothing like that team described.
Well, let's go backwards. Freddie Anderson, I think, stole Game 6. The Bruins were the better team in Game 6. Yeah. I don't think there's any question about it. He had the horseshoe going. I thought he had the horseshoe going maybe early in that first period where I saw that puck trickle through him, and then he was able to reach back and stop it before it crossed the line. I'm like, oh, is it going to be that kind of a night? So Game 6, they were better. The Bruins were not ready to go in Game 5. I think had they lost the series, I think we would be having this conversation about Game 5. How did they not come out ready to go? The Maple Leafs scored twice in the first 10 minutes of that game. And the Bruins didn't defend in a way that we had seen them during the course of the year. That was a departure for them. Game 4, they won. Game 3, that was a tight game. I thought they got a bad break. That allowed Toronto to take the lead in Game 1 on the delay of game penalty that should not have been called. That was a missed call on Riley Nash. They were able to battle back, and that was a tight game until Austin Matthews scored in the third period with a wicked shot in the left circle by Tuukka Rask. So,
were you expecting this, though? Were you expecting, with Toronto, when you saw the matchup, were you expecting this to be as close of a contest?
Absolutely. You had one team with 50 wins, another team with 49 wins. I think the shame of it is that the way the NHL playoffs are structured, both in the East and the West, you have teams that shouldn't be meeting one another in the first round, much less the second round.
Yeah, this is weird that you got the first and second seed in the East playing each other in round two. The NHL is all messed up.
The NHL is messed up. Would you have pulled Rask after the fourth goal?
No. No, absolutely.
Because you're out of the hockey writers and people that cover the team, you're in a minority there. There was a big call from everyone to put in Hood open at that point.
That is not the right move at that point. Bruce Cassidy made the right choice to stick with Tuukka Rask. And I think his whole philosophy heading into the game, I'm going to put together the lineup and put together the combinations that got me to this point. And I think you don't need to waver from that during the course of the game. You're only down a goal at that point. I don't think that there's any reason to pull Rask. It was certainly bumpy for him. It was even worse for Freddie Anderson.
Okay,
It ended up being much worse for Freddie Anderson, but he, despite the soft goals that he had let in, he had also, like you said, he'd sent back a lot of goals that might have gone in.
Who was the better goaltender across the seven games?
Anderson.
Yeah.
He was?
Rask
won all four games. Who had better numbers? All right, in the first four games of the series, Tuukka was the better goaltender. In the last two games of the series, Freddie raised his game, stole Game 6. I thought Tuukka probably, I don't know if he stole the Game 4 victory, but he was responsible for that win.
You know,
along with the play of Pastrnak and guys like Marchand playing without Bergeron there in Game 4. Then in Game 7, I think both of those goalies and both of those teams felt the weight and the gravity and the intensity of what was on the line in Game 7. Both teams looked jittery to me. And I thought Freddie, maybe started to find his game in the second period. He made a couple of key saves, one on Torrey Krug, and then all of a sudden, Kapanen comes down and he scores on the shorthanded goal, but the Bruins were able to solve him there in the third period. Why? Because they were able to get pucks and bodies to the front of the net. And that's the case with any good goaltender. Tips, screens, rebounds, second opportunities. And one of the things that guys like David Backes and Bruce Cassidy were talking about heading into Game 7 is we've got to get to the net quicker so we don't get boxed out. They got better position. I think on the Torrey Krug shot, it's a great low shot going glove side, but he gets a little bit of help. I think Anderson, you know, if I'm a Leafs fan, he's got to stop that. But right. Marchand cutting across and drawing some traffic with them certainly helped Torrey Krug and the Bruins in that case.
Okay, well, let's kind of ease the pain then of the people who are worried about Tuukka Rask going into the second round. Let's just talk about last night's game. How much blame do you put on Tuukka for those four goals that were scored? Because, I mean, there were people, once again, discussing whether or not Cassidy should have put Khudobin in the third. Now, obviously, Tuukka was great in the third period, or at least he was better than he was
in the
first two.
Stopped all the pucks he was supposed to stop, but
you're right.
I thought the Bruins took over the game at that point.
Yeah.
Listen, I think for Tuukka Rask, going forward, he needs to be better. If this team wants to go deep, he needs to be better. But I think when it comes to game sevens, if you look at some of the great goaltenders in history, and I'm in no way comparing Tuukka to guys like Patrick Waugh or Grant Fuhr. Some of the numbers and some of the performances for those goaltenders in those games, in those situations, aren't great if you look at the goals against average and save percentage for a guy like Grant Fuhr, but he's won, and that's the difference. That will, and I think it's a valid comparison, or it's a valid critique of Tuukka if you're going to talk about the two of them. But even for a guy like Patrick Waugh, I was just kind of interested. Well, Patrick Waugh has played in 13 game sevens. He and Scott Stevens have played in the most. Zdeno Chara has now played in 12. Patrick Waugh's record in game sevens is 6-7.
All right, well, I would have to go back and watch the game sevens. He's responsible for that. All right.
But I think that, you know, the long and short of it is Tuukka needs to be better, I think, going forward.
Oh, there's no question
and
about that.
And I think that there's more to him. And if you go back to 2011, I guarantee if you look at the first two rounds for Tim Thomas, there were probably some bumpy moments, too.
Well, the best line I heard yesterday about Tuukka Rask is you would be better off putting $7 million in cash in front of the goal.
Toucher and Rich.
Are you kidding me?
Toucher and Rich.
Embarrassing to America.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Judd Surratt, voice of the Boston Bruins here on the radio. Let's go to some phone calls. Ron, you're on with Judd Surratt. Ron.
Oh, sorry, guys.
Hey.
Hey, what's going on? So, I just want to say, I'm kind of sick of all the Tuukka apologists. If it wasn't for Khudobin earlier this year, this season could have went in a completely different direction. And, you know, I'm just sick of hearing everybody always making excuses for Tuukka. Khudobin has earned a chance to play in these playoffs, but I can't stand Tuukka. He drives me nuts. He makes me want to puke every time he's in net because you never know what you're going to get, you know. Last night we needed him to make some of those saves he made in the third period of game six, you know, where he was like actually throwing his body around a little bit, and he just doesn't do enough of that, you know. And aside from that, Jake DeBrusque is a stud. And he seemed to be the only one, like, really emotionally engaged throughout the whole series. So I really hope they kind of get it together before we face Tampa.
Well, I think when it comes to Jake DeBrusque, especially in games 3-7, I thought he had dominant performances.
Yeah.
In games 1 and 2, you had the top line that sparkled. You had Marchand, Pasternak, and Bergeron combining for 20 points. And the Bruins routed the Toronto Maple Leafs in those first two games. And then things started to tighten up. As far as Anton Khudobin, if you look across the regular season, he played an enormous role in the Bruins' success. He was a reliable backup for Tuukka all season long. But again, going forward, Rask needs to be more consistent. He needs to raise the level of his game. The Bruins are going to face an even better team in the Tampa Bay Lightning in round 2.
Is Tampa a better matchup for the Bruins? We were discussing that earlier because Tampa doesn't have the blinding speed that Toronto has, and the Bruins played them well during the regular season, but they also have a Hart Trophy finalist and a Vezina Trophy finalist.
Well, if you look at the back end, they have two high-end players.
A Norris Trophy finalist, too.
And Victor Hedman and Ryan McDonagh, you know, those are a couple of guys that the Maple Leafs don't feature whatsoever. If you look up front, you have some really high-end dangerous forwards. Nikita Kucherov ripped it up against the New Jersey Devils in that first round. Steven Stamkos is healthy, and he's back and going. You got Tyler Johnson. And then you've got a lot of secondary scoring, which the Leafs struggled with during the course of the series, where you've got guys like Yanni Gourde and Braden Point. These are really good players, as well as some glue guys and some character players like Chris Kunitz and Ryan Callahan that can play valuable third and fourth line shifts.
Do you make anything of the Bruins' success against Tampa Bay in the regular season?
No, the regular season is completely different. Much like I didn't make anything of the Toronto Maple Leafs' success against the Bruins during the regular season. The Bruins beat them only once during the regular season. And oddly enough, that was with Austin Matthews in the lineup.
All right, let's go to Phil. Phil, go ahead.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering how you thought Torey Krug played last night when I was watching the highlights of the second period when he was, like, every single defensive breakdown was happening when Krug was on the ice. And the one play I really noticed was when, I don't know if it was Marlowe, who almost got a breakaway, and McQuaid comes skating off the bench and basically dives out, lays out, basically hooks him, and there's Krug basically pulling up and letting him go to the net. So, I mean, I don't know if Cassidy's coaching him to just play offense. He just feels like he's out of position all the time. And, you know, I don't know what you guys think about Krug.
By the way, McQuaid saved the game with that play.
It was a great play on Zach Hyman as he's coming back and he races back to break up that rush. That's a fabulous play from Adam McQuaid. He played limited minutes, but was a big factor in my mind across the series, especially when the Bruins were shorthanded. He played a valuable role. As far as Torey Krug, I think he was like a lot of Bruins in those first 40 minutes. I think the Bruins, both teams, had a hard time making plays and handling the puck, and maybe that was the gravity of the moment.
Yeah, but if Toronto goes up two goals at that point, that's the game. And so that was a huge play.
Right, and get the next goal. And for Torey Krug, I think you could notice in the first 30 seconds, and I mentioned this to John just as we had walked in, that you could sense a different team in the first 30 seconds in that third period for the Bruins. It was the way they were moving the puck, the decisions they were making, and going tape to tape. They win a faceoff. Kevin Miller bumps it back up top for Torey Krug, and he blistered a shot in. And ball game. Game on.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Brian. Brian, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Two things. The first is Rask and his inconsistency. That shorthanded goal last night, to me, was a sin. I don't think he should allow that to go in. And I just, he's not consistent enough to beat your Pittsburghs of the world and your other teams, that, you know, the top teams. The other thing is, when is Rick Nash going to show up? You know, we definitely need his offense in this next series. You can't expect 7 goals a game from guys like DeBrusk and other guys. So that's it. Thanks.
Yeah, what about Rick Nash? What do you think the deal with him is?
I thought Nash had a good game last night. He was involved.
Better.
He was engaged.
Yeah,
he picked up an assist.
Yeah.
He needs to produce. I think the fact is that here in the second round, as deep as the Bruins can go, it's more about there's a lot of activity. He's generating a lot of chances, but we need a little accomplishment. He's got to be able to finish on some of these chances. And I think in talking to the coaching staff, maybe it would help him if he just stops out in front after some of these shots. He's able to break free and use his size and use his reach, his skating ability to create some chances. Freddie Anderson stopped him a couple of times, like he did a lot of Bruins later in that series. But maybe if he stops out in front and uses that big frame and those good hands, he's able to finish. But that's what you need from a guy like Rick Nash.
Yeah, it's frustrating because Rick Nash, the book on him was he had struggled in the playoffs because he had to be the guy. Obviously, on this team, he doesn't. And
Struggling.
No, I agree that he played better last night, right. but there's a lot of times he struggled, a lot of games he struggled.
Freddie, I thought he was good the first two games of the series in particular, maybe in games 3 through 6, you didn't notice him as much. I thought he was pretty good in game 6. And even Rick admitted, because he's coming back from the concussion, those first two games you're playing on adrenaline. And that first game of the series, he was a force. He was an absolute force in the series. And ended up scoring the game winner on the power play in game 2 when the Bruins won it convincingly over the Toronto Maple Leafs. But the other thing that he admitted is, and this is for a lot of guys who come back from injuries, after that adrenaline wears off, then you have to rediscover your game. And I think that he's still trying to find it, a lot like Charlie McAvoy is.
Were you kind of surprised that Ryan Donato did not find his way into the lineup, and do you think he will in the near future?
In Game 7?
Yes.
No, I'm not surprised, because here's the quandary. If you're going to play Ryan Donato, you're not ready to play him at center, assuming everybody's healthy. He's not ready to play center in the playoffs. It's difficult to ask a guy who doesn't normally play his offside. He's a left-handed shot, to play the right side. So then the question is, which of your left wingers do you take out? You're not taking out Marchand. You're clearly not taking out Jake DeBrusque. Mm-hmm. You don't want to take out Tim Schaller to disrupt that fourth line. So the question is Heinen or, in this case, Ryan Donato. And I think for the coaching staff, they trust Danton in his own end. They trust him defensively. And that combination with Heinen, Riley Nash, and David Backes has been reliable as a 200-foot line for Bruce Cassidy, and that's why he elected to go there. But that said, if the Bruins either are having an issue or there's an injury issue, all of a sudden you can potentially bring a guy who can be an impact player off the ninth floor and into the lineup. That's a big weapon.
All right, Judd Surratt, you can hear him Saturday at 3 o'clock as the second round starts against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Thank you so much for coming in, sir. We appreciate it. Now get back to Jaffe's house and disrupt their...
Great seeing you, Freddie. Great seeing you, Johnny.
Good seeing you, too.
Great to see Rich, too.
Yeah, give my best to the Jaffes. All right. We will be back. Here are the headlines. .985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Be listening this morning at 7:50 for your chance to score a $50 Dunkin' Donuts gift card to celebrate Pay It Forward Day. Take advantage of Dunkin's new go-to offers and make someone else's day brighter. There it have it. Bruins moving on, playing Tampa Bay 3 o'clock on Saturday. Are you going to be able to watch that game?
First little bit of it, yeah. I'll be able to watch at least the first period and a half.
Why? Then what? What's so important?
Going to the Garden. Got a game to call.
Oh, that's right. You're calling that
either
game.
Either way, now it's official. It's either going to be Game 7 against Milwaukee or Game 1 against Philadelphia Saturday night, 8 o'clock.
Saturday night affair.
Yes.
A lot of pressure on you.
Yes.
I mean, you have to talk to at least a dozen cab drivers.
Just mean-spirited. That's all it is. You're just being mean-spirited.
Well, I mean, there's...
You know I'm looking forward to this. You know it's a big game for the Celtics. You know, maybe if I'm lucky, they play this call. You know, if something big happens in a Game 7, you know, a last-minute win, maybe this gets replayed in the coming years.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to this.
That's right. Everyone will always remember Game 6 of the Milwaukee Bucks.
Game 7 of the Milwaukee
Bucks. Game 7. Yes. Okay, sorry, because you're doing the next one. Game 7 of the Milwaukee Bucks series.
If somebody does something spectacular, yes. Suppose your boy Jason Tatum, your favorite player Jason Tatum, hits a three to win Game 7, and that is the first step in what could be a great career for him. People will look back on that and go, wow.
You've convinced,
and I might be there, yes.
So you've made yourself that delusional that you think something's going to happen in that game that resonates with
seven
Celtics.
In all the
history of the Boston Celtics,
Game 7 are different.
In the first round against Milwaukee.
Game 7s are different. Strange stuff happens. If something amazing happens, that's right. Something amazing happens, yeah, maybe it does resonate. But
in the history of Havlicek steals it, and then the Larry Bird situation.
Bird steals the ball in Detroit, yeah. Eastern Conference Finals against Detroit, sure. No, I'm not saying it's going to be as great as that, but I'm looking forward to the game. I can't wait to do it. I think it's going to be great.
Okay.
And you could rain all over it as much as you want. I'm looking forward to having it.
You realize that there's going to be about a tenth of the people listening to that are listening to us right now.
Maybe so.
Well, no, it's for sure. It's a Saturday night.
Maybe so. I'm
When's
still looking.
Tip off? 8 o'clock?
8 o'clock, yes.
I mean, what do you think people are doing at 10 o'clock at night?
Well, Celtic fans will be watching the game or listening to the game.
Where will they be listening to
Either
it?
In the car or I assume in the car going somewhere. I don't know how people listen these days, whether they're at home or whether they're in the car. I have no idea. But it's going to be fun. I can't wait to do it, and I'm looking forward to it.
So, have you sent a play-by-play tape to anyone recently?
Not recently, no.
Okay. You haven't used this Celtics experience to try to weasel your way into a job?
Weasel? I don't know if we call it.
Because you know when I was with the Mitch Albom show,
yes,
that their sports guy who was not even on mic, he was just, he would come in and do sports reports,
sure,
got the Toronto Raptors job.
Yes, I am aware of that. I met him. He's a good guy.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it was no great shakes.
Is he the best person I've ever met? Probably not, but in the brief time that I have had a chance to speak to him, he's perfectly
fine. He's a contemporary of yours. You
perfectly
guys,
nice guy.
You guys share a similar skill set. You know, like when you get, when you're with.
So he was off mic, wasn't part of the program.
He's a play-by-play guy.
Oh, okay. I was like, similar skill set. I was like, oh, that's.
Yeah, he's a play-by-play guy.
You're being mean. All right, that's fine.
I'm not being mean.
Okay.
What if it's a game one?
If it's a game one against Philadelphia, I think old-time Celtic fans will like the rivalry renewed, Fred.
Okay.
The new-look Philadelphia 76ers.
Mike, go ahead.
Fred, I've been listening to you guys for over a decade. Just give John his credit, for God's sakes. He's excited about calling a game seven.
Why should he be so excited? What's so exciting?
Fred's miserable, so he wants everyone to be miserable with him.
Yeah, why's John got to be so excited about something?
It's absolutely unbelievable. If you had the chance to be calling Game 7 of the Toronto series, you would be talking about it nonstop.
No, I wouldn't. But first of all, there's no way in hell I could do it. I mean, just it would be impossible. Calling hockey games, I don't know how anyone can do it. It's very difficult. But no, I'd much rather do what I do than, mm-hmm, than call games.
Patrice Bergeron's goal, the Dave Gosher, Bergeron, was that not a first-round game winner in a Game 7 against Toronto?
For a team that moved well into the playoffs, yes.
All I'm saying is that was, Bruins have done a lot of things, and that was a first-round winner.
Mike, don't you think John is a little enamored with this job, considering the lack of audience there's going to be?
Sits there and puts up with your crap every single day, and he just is a pleasant man who's trying to enjoy his career that is budding into superstardom for the Green Team.
That's right. That's right. He's on his way to superstardom, you say?
I think that he is on the fast track to ESPN right now. That's my...
Now you're being mean. So you couldn't resist it. You started talking to him, and then nature took its course.
Wait,
and you started having to bust his balls.
I was quiet. I didn't say anything.
See, Mike? See how that works? You talk to him for 2 minutes, and already you're busting his balls.
You know what? I mean, I'm Team Wallach till the end, even though I've been Team Freddie T since the BCN days, but you've just been so... goddamn miserable in the past couple weeks.
I'm not miserable.
You're being excited.
Very
miserable.
Are you kidding? I'm in a great mood today. I'm all in.
Somebody called in last week and said, Fred, you're an only child, and that's why you don't understand that everything that you say, you literally can't see the other side to. And this is another example of that you just do not get it.
Well, I'm
calling a game seven on the air. What's like not a big deal about that?
That no one's going to be listening.
Says who? You guys just had Judd Zerod on.
Oh, yeah, but that's a Bruins game on a weeknight. That's different.
Is anyone going to be listening to Judd on Saturday at 3 p.m.?
Yes, because then people are out and about.
Okay.
Yeah.
No one's out and about at 8 o'clock on Saturday.
Not like 10 o'clock. You might have some people at 8 o'clock.
I see.
10 o'clock.
Are you just going to let me stay on the air? Is this how this is going down?
I don't mind you being on the air at all. I think it's great.
I just want you to bust John's balls again because you can't resist.
What else we got? Gap tooth. I don't know. You guys have kind of worn it all out, but
all right. Well, there's only so much you can get after a guy for. Brian, go ahead.
Hey, Freddie. I'm just saying this is kind of unlistenable. You know, past couple weeks you've just been such a miserable dick.
Why have I been miserable?
I agree,
dude. Give Johnny his credit. He's doing a good. He's doing well. You know, his parents are probably like, oh, wow, we never thought I'd make it this far.
See, now you just busted his balls.
What the hell is going on here?
See, you just busted his balls.
Hang the hell up on this guy. What the hell? Are you with me or are you not with me?
And by the way, how am I miserable today? I'm reveling in this Bruins win. I'm reveling in it.
Can't you just be happy for me, Fred? Can't you just be happy for me?
I never said you did a bad job. I never did.
Happy
I think
that
you do
I'm
a
doing
good
this
job.
Game. I know you said that multiple times.
It's impossible for me to look at someone who's this excited about something and not try to knock them down a peg.
I see. You hate the fact that I'm happy. I understand.
I don't think it's fair, though, to say there was a day I was miserable, but I don't think it's I'll admit that.
No, but
that.
More specifically about this thing.
No,
calling a game on a Saturday doesn't interfere with the show at all.
I didn't say it did, and I didn't say you don't do a good job. I'm breaking your balls, okay. But it's unfair to say, especially today, that I've been miserable. There was one day last week or the week before where I was in a foul mood. But
well, you weren't too happy yesterday, if I remember correctly. You started the show by saying there was no way the Bruins could win.
You know what I was doing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So I have to get on the air.
Yeah.
And go, hooray!
That's what I did. And it worked out just fine, didn't
it? Yeah. So someone's got to be on this show that has some sort of reality to them and that doesn't wave pom poms. And that, unfortunately, is me. So I will take the bullets.
So what you were doing was you were sacrificing yourself.
I didn't think they were going to win. And I didn't want to get, and I didn't think they were going to win, and I was honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
You too can go sit there and wave your pom poms and flags.
As I remember it, Rich was more neutral than me. It was you were really negative. Rich was kind of a moderate, and I was on the other side. That's how I remember it. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. Rich could come in here and say, "What are you talking about?" And then,
you guys are both positive enough for everybody.
Oh, I. our outlook on life is way too good.
Our outlook is a horrible thing.
So there has to be a negative to the positive.
Yeah, like you're like a dumb people. You're too delusional. You don't see what's going on. That's wrong.
We all went to Total Recall and had our minds wiped.
That's right.
We've forgotten all the negative stuff. Right. We're all just superheroes.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen. This crap I take to save the two of you.
I understand.
If I wasn't on this show, we'd be floating around on a pink balloon and people would go insane.
So
they need me.
So in reality, people don't fully realize how awesome you are to this
program.
Well,
according to research, they do. All right. we'll be back.
The games are only half of it. Thatcher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
By the way, Big Market Tees, we are 5 minutes away from Drunken Bruins recaps from Game 7 outside of the TD Garden. So I'm looking forward to that.
Big smile on your face.
I mean, come on.
I was shooed out of the room when I went to talk to them.
They're back. The Bruins are back. I mean, this is like what we've been waiting for, and all I know is that yesterday somebody sent me a video of a guy shirtless belly flopping into a puddle of water outside of the TD Garden.
But like full-on belly flopping?
Oh, yeah. Dude, it was awesome. Like, I mean, there was from the rain earlier, a massive puddle had been collecting right outside of, I guess it's the East Gate. And there was a huge crowd of people around him cheering this guy
on. The non-construction gate on the side.
Right. And he's taking his shirt off, and he was just belly flopping and swimming around in this puddle. And I'm like, all right. But Drunken Recap season is back. Thank goodness.
Yeah, it is easy to get those things. Bruins fans very excited, as they should be. Again, I gave them very little chance going that game. I couldn't be happier I was wrong.
Oh, yeah. Many people remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I gave them very little chance, and I am very, very happy that I was wrong.
Listen, I believe, Fred, the reason that you said that was because not that you truly 1,000% felt that way, but that it's a much easier to deal with if you think that they're going to lose and then they end up winning than if you think they're going to win and they end up losing.
I thought they were going to lose.
Well, I mean, I also think that maybe not to the extent.
Not 2%.
Right, right.
Alex, go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, Fred?
What's up, Alex?
Man, you've been such a Debbie Downer this weekend. I feel like the
what the hell? Why this week? There was one day last week.
Happy this whole entire week is when you were talking about Newbell.
That's true. No, I've been happy the whole week. I was.
Oh, no. Yesterday you were saying the Bruins had no chance, and today you're raining on Wallace Parade about him doing the call in game 7,
Well, listen, if the Bruins win, he's calling a game 1, which is even lamer.
Celtics.
Yeah, the Celtics. Listen, I can't bust John's balls. What has happened to these snowflakes? I can't bust on... Oh, poor John. Oh, Fred, don't bust on John's balls. You're so miserable.
Did you, by the way, did you see Sean Grady's tweet last night?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. It said,
yes, I did.
It said, hey, John Wallach, and it had these two like emoji eyes, because it said Game 7 or Game 1 was going to be on Saturday.
It was finally confirmed last night that what we thought was going to happen.
Sean hears us. Sean listens to us. He knows that you're trying to kick him out of his job.
I don't think that he even has to listen. I don't think he has to listen. He figures that out himself.
He's felt that knife slowly get placed on his back, and you're digging right there.
I think he's more...
He's too fast for me.
I think he's more... I think he's more relieved that John is the guy who takes over. Got a lot of pressure.
You never want a really strong number two.
No.
I understand.
Every time he listens, he goes,
just good enough to do the job, but nowhere close to good enough to take
over. It's like Brady watching Hoyer play.
That's exactly what it is.
They got rid of Garoppolo.
Garoppolo, so. Let's have him do it until we find our real quarterback in the draft.
Pat, go ahead. Everyone, these millennial snowflakes.
I understand, man. Well, like, what are we in this world if we can't break our friends, you know, nuts every once in a while, you know what I mean?
Of course.
But, I noticed with you, Fred, it's not even on this level right now, man. Like, you're miserable to the point that I think that you're just so sick of this area, which I get it, you know what I mean? Like, you're not from here. You gotta hear these people call up all the time talking about sports and this, that, and the third, and Boston this, Boston that. And I just think, honestly, deep down, like, and I get it, too, because I would go out of my mind, too. Like, if I see another Boston Wahlberg movie, I'm going to snap. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I get it. Like, this area, like, it's just, it wouldn't sell anywhere else but Boston. Like, I'm from here. I'm a sports fan from here, and I get, like, aggravated with this. You know what I mean? But the shade that you throw, subliminal, kind of towards Rich, I feel like, I sit back and I think, I'm like, I bet they hate each other off here.
We do.
I mean?
It's awful.
How I look at it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, it's, you know, you usually end up hearing stuff like that, you know, with successful radio people like the Stern Show and all, you know.
Yeah.
You guys could have been anywhere, you know. I feel like you guys could have been satellite, and you guys probably should. Like, the stuff that Rich can do, you know, production-wise, the sound that he gets, he's, you know, incredible with that.
Well, our contract's up this year, so who knows what's going to happen.
You never know.
I think your comic humor that you have, Fred, would probably stand out in a better situation than here, than having a, you know, sports.
You want him to leave. That sounds like you want him to leave.
No, I just feel like he's probably just going out of his mind, you know, which I would too. I am. I'm going out of my mind around here. Like, I love the sports teams and I love the winning, but like I said, it does get a little bit, you know, you just feel like, you know, other places in the world, they're probably just like, you know, they're sick of this place. You know what I mean? Like,
all right. Well, I appreciate the call.
I mean, if you've been listening to the show for any length of time, I don't think my demeanor has changed a whole lot.
It's pretty much the same.
Yeah, and if you could go back, and if you go back in my Twitter mentions, I guess, you could go back 8 years and hear the same criticism.
Sure.
You go back 12 years and say the same. You go back to Atlanta and find the same criticisms.
Just know that, you know, Fred and I do truly hate each other.
Yeah.
This is all an act. We're staying together for the kids, for Wallach.
We always have to have meetings with management about our
everything
fights.
You hear, all the rumors, it's true.
Yeah. That's right.
We're not grown men who realize that we talk about people who play with bouncy balls all day, and any kind of fight on the air is the most inconsequential thing ever.
Well, the funny thing is, I wasn't even fighting with Wallach. I was breaking his balls. But, you know, these liberal millennial snowflakes.
Snowflakes, right.
That's right. The snowflakes.
Yeah. They can't
take it. Moon bats.
It's good to know that there are people out there calling in to defend me, though, Fred. Not going to lie.
There's Wallaholics. We know this.
That's right.
We know there's a huge faction of Wallaholics.
Yeah. Because they look at him almost as like a piece of a small cow that's going to be made into veal.